Hello and welcome to the Ice Age Farmer Podcast. This is Christian bringing you episode 5, a truly compelling episode today, I believe. You'll be just as excited to listen to it as I am to bring it to you. We'll be starting off, as always, with some daily steps towards self-sufficiency, what we're doing, sort of a progress report, and a community coming together to hold each other accountable for moving constantly towards self-sufficiency and whatever we can afford, whatever steps we can afford to take, given the constraints that are on all of us, and we all have different ones. Then today we'll be doing a special icebreaker, a little bit of a history section exploring, thanks to Bob Felix from Ice Age Now, some of the aspects of the Great Famine of 1315 to 1317, and taking a look at why that might be relevant to our situation today and entering a new Grand Solar Minimum. After that, we'll be diving into some of the news from the Grand Solar Minimum. There's just a ton of it, as always, but especially today, I think it's going to be particularly interesting and, as I said, compelling in the context, especially of the history section that we'll be reviewing. So I'm looking forward to that. Most of the stories I have already sent off to my twitter.com/iceagefarmer presence, where you can sort of follow along as I find these things and string them together and then bundle them together, but the highlights at least in these videos here, in these episodes. And then finally, we will be taking a single question from a Bitcoin enthusiast who is wondering exactly what my take is on the coming or not coming split. And sort of, I have not wanted to explore Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies in too much detail until now, but due to the timeliness of this question and the fact that the fork or not fork, as I will talk about that, is arriving quickly, it's worth bringing this up quickly. And basically, my advice will be to get your Bitcoins in your own wallet so you can be on either side of that fork, but we'll talk about that. And that'll be the show today. So without any further ado, let's get into it. First, for the steps of the day, I did hear from Jay Herb McKenzie, who's started sprouting and is really enjoying the results of that rapid ability to produce little living things, produce raw living foods that are extremely healthy for you. Also, Cheryl writes in with some of her experiences raising goats. Some great information in here. She is in Minnesota, just south of the Canadian border, and writes, "The most efficient animal I have found for milk production is not a cow, but a goat. They produce the most milk for the least feed, but the hay they do get has to be dairy quality. I'm currently working 3 breeds, the Nigerian Dwarf, a 50 to 80 pound animal when full grown, who with good breeding can produce a 7-8% fat, naturally homogenized milk that is the best milk ever. These little goats are very easy on the ground due to their small size. The next size up I raise is a Pygora, which is a fiber goat producing a cashmere mohair blend that's fantastic for socks and other garments. And to add icing to the cake, I had a couple of my girls freshen with dairy quality udders and give me the same rich milk as my Nigerians, and more of it even. The Pygoras are a bit bigger, but still pretty easy on the ground. They run in the 100-pound range. I also have a few of the full-sized La Mancha goats, which I have chose for the highest fat, running only 4% compared to the 7-8 of the littler goats. What the bigger goats offer is the ability to pull or pack, if trained. They do churn the ground a bit, and while not bad, the milk isn't as good as those of the 2 smaller breeds. To be comfortable in the cold up here, the fat in the diet is needed. It's also needed to assimilate the fat-soluble vitamins to stay healthy. After reading Weston Price's work on nutrition, which is excellent, especially on dental ramifications, I realized the goats would be the most efficient and highest quality source of fat I could produce, not to mention the cheese, yogurt, and ice cream from their milk. Goats are just plain fun to be around too, which helps if life gets difficult. My idea of being self-sufficient is to run without the need for heavy equipment, so I'm working on mobile shelters that can be moved through the woods, which is the best browsing habitat for the goats. I also want to run them over pasture to mineralize it for hay growth, alternating fields to keep the land in good shape. I'm planning on collecting rainwater from the roof of each shelter and running it through a slow sand filter before using it to water the goats. This is an interesting, totally self-sufficient goat setup imagining here. I recently started looking into barley fodder to feed not only the goats, but my poultry as well. The question is now whether the barley will be available to produce the fodder. It's a very high quality feed and a more efficient use of the grain to produce milk than feeding it direct. It's also grown indoors and so offers protection of the feed from the elements as the weather destabilizes. It's like growing wheat or barley grass for the animals instead of using cut hay. Chickens can be raised on compost and or fodder. If you're interested, check out Vermont Composting and Jeff Lawton. Yeah, Jeff's great permaculture resource, I've raised lots of heirloom breeds of chickens, and by far the Icelandic chickens are the ones I would choose for a grid-down survival situation. They forage as good as a guinea, and I have one hen who is one of the best I've had at raising chicks on range. They're the most colorful. I've also been looking at the season extension for veggie crops through greenhouses and intensive planting. Watch out for the hail there if you go with the greenhouse. My favorite YouTube on no-till intensive farming is anything I can find from Singing Frogs Farm. Yeah, I was just there a couple weeks ago, and I'm hoping to do a video on them soon. They do very little weeding once established and get multiple crops on the same ground. Yeah, they've been practicing no-till for a long time. Anyway, that's some terrific information from Cheryl there. Thank you for writing in with that. And I'm just really thrilled to be able to share that here on my home front here. I've been dealing with a with a peppermint problem. So I thought it would be cool to, and it has been cool, in fact, to have a little section of my aquaponics bed dedicated to herbs. Sort of like dinner, salad, whatever you want. Some stuff. I've got some mint and some basil and some thyme and a little parsley over here. And the problem, everything's been doing great. The problem is that the peppermint has, in fact, been doing too great. It has, especially in the last week I've been gone, totally just taken over about about half of this 4x4 foot bed. So I'm going to be trimming that back and probably looking into not, and maybe even getting it out of that bed altogether, because I just need some things that are going to be able to coexist in there. And peppermint looks like it's way too aggressive for a shared space. Probably should have known that, but there's a tip for you if you don't. Also, something I've been learning here the hard way, I mentioned not too long ago that I created a little 2-inch NFT pipe system for just hydroponics, actually. And also, while I was gone, it turned out that one of the kales that I put in there, the root ball grew so large that it totally dominated the 2-inch PVC pipe. And so the flow couldn't, it just backed up the flow gradually more and more, resulting in the fluid spilling out and the plants, especially downstream, not getting any fluid or nutrients. So I came back soon enough to rescue those, but a good lesson learned there that the 2-inch NFT, while a little bit more manageable and certainly cheaper, doesn't do the trick. If your plants are going to grow to a decent size so you can get nice kale leaves off them, you'll probably want to use the 3-inch NFT like I've used over in the aquaponics system. It's been doing fine for much longer, and if I had this to do over again, I would use 3 inches. So, lesson learned. Here's a shot of that 3-inch aquaponics NFT system. And I've also been struggling, as you can see here, with some critter eating the tops out of my new plants. So, as soon as I transfer a little seedling over into the beds, something, it might even be ants. I haven't figured it out yet, but something comes and eats them. So, that's keeping me from new starts. And obviously, it's a bad thing. I'm working on that right now. We've also got some updates on the spirulina, but I'll be doing a video about that. So please get in touch, iceagefarmer@gmail.com. Let me know what you are doing today to prepare yourself for the Grand Solar Minimum. How are you moving towards a more resilient future, a self-sufficient, a food-secure future for you and your family? Let me know. Let's share that information. And with that, let's get into the next section here, the icebreaker. A new section I wanted to introduce to share, talk through some of the history that is germane to the Grand Solar Minimum, so that particularly today, as we look through some of the news headlines, we'll have some context, something to compare it to, and something to understand why I'm sharing these particular headlines. This section is going to be about the Great Famine of 1315 to 1317. And I want to thank again, a shout out to Robert Felix, iceagenow.info, from Wikipedia. The Great Famine of 1315 to 1317 was the first of a series of large-scale crises that struck Europe early in the 14th century. Most of Europe, extending east to Russia and south to Italy, was affected. The famine caused millions of deaths over an extended number of years and marked a clear end to the period of growth and prosperity from the 11th to the 13th centuries. The Great Famine started with bad weather in spring 1315. Crop failures lasted through 1316 until the summer harvest in 1317, and Europe did not fully recover until 1322. The period, again, it started with bad weather in the spring, and then crop failures and wet summers. The period was marked by extreme levels of crime, disease, mass death, and even cannibalism and infanticide. The crisis had consequences, etc. Let's skip down. Because I want to focus here on what did it look like? What did it look like, especially at the beginning? How did this great famine unfold? Would we recognize it if we were living through it? What would we know to look for? In the spring of 1315, unusually heavy rain began in much of Europe. Throughout the spring and the summer, it continued to rain, and the temperature remained cool. Under such conditions, grain could not ripen, leading to widespread crop failures. Grain was brought indoors in urns and pots to keep dry. The straw and hay for the animals could not be cured, so there was no fodder for the livestock. The price of food began to rise. Prices in England doubled between spring and midsummer. Salt, which was the only way to cure and preserve meat, was difficult to obtain because brine could not be evaporated in wet weather. Its price increased from 30 shillings to 40. Wheat prices in Lorraine grew by over 300%, tripled, more than tripled, making bread totally unaffordable to peasants. Stores of grain for long-term emergencies were limited to the royalty and nobility. Because of the general increased population pressures, due, as we said earlier, to the period of prosperity for the previous couple hundred years, people began to harvest whatever they could find, edible roots, plants, grasses, nuts, and bark in the forest. A number of documented incidents show the extent of the famine. Even the King of England had difficulty finding bread for himself. It was a rare occasion. In the spring of 1316, it continued to rain, so the second summer of rain now, on a European population that was already deprived of energy and reserves to sustain itself. All segments of society, from nobility to peasant, were affected, but especially the peasants, about 95% of the population, with no real food reserves. To provide some measure, the future was mortgaged by slaughtering the draft animals, eating the seed grains, or just totally eating everything you can, knowing that that means you won't have anything to work with next year. Abandoning children as well, which is where Hansel and Gretel come from. The height of the famine was reached by 1317. Wet weather continued, and finally in that summer, the weather returned to its normal patterns. Folks, we're talking about the Great Famine of 1315 to 17. Millions of deaths due to crop failures that resulted from two wet springs and summers. It does not take much to knock our agricultural production out of balance. And returning briefly for just a little more background, during the medieval warm period, the period prior to 1300, the population of Europe exploded compared to prior eras. The onset of the Great Famine coincided with the end of that medieval warm period. Between 1310 and 1330, Northern Europe saw some of the worst and most sustained periods of bad, extreme weather in the entire Middle Ages, characterized by severe winters and rainy and cold summers. The Great Famine may also have been precipitated by a volcanic event, perhaps that of Mount Te Rauwera, New Zealand, which lasted about 5 years. Changing weather patterns, the ineffectiveness of medieval governments in dealing with crises, and population level at a historic high made it a time for little margin for error in food production. Go ahead and check this out for more history, more context on what previous solar minima might have looked like. I'm sure you're already familiar with the modern minimum, the Dalton minimum. If you're not, you should be. And because this is the data that we have that tells us what to expect from what we're seeing now, the changing solar patterns. Now, with an understanding of how wet and cool springs and summers and crop failures can cause millions of deaths, let's take a look at our headlines now and see what's going on. Let's look again at some of the most recent hail events, because the hail, as I've been mentioning, is off the charts. It's just getting more and more ridiculous. These, in Turkey, 10 centimeter diameter, which is 4 inches, just large projectiles nailing the ground here. So those are huge splashes. What does it do if it actually hits something? Well, this is an Airbus A320 that at about 5,000 feet, imagine being the pilots at 5,000 feet, having your windshield crack in from huge hail. That's really insane. Turkey, not the only example of massive hail this week. Also, Italy having a quote-unquote freak hailstorm sweep across the beaches here, covered in large hailstones. I think this guy down here has the right idea. It's funny to see Jack Daniels, an American whiskey, in Italy, but I guess it's imported. So that's there you go, in Italy as well, and then in here in Spain, also some extreme hail events. Just keeping an eye on these because they obviously devastate crops and are also dangerous. It goes without saying to people, what were we looking for from the Great Famine of 1315 to 1317? Well, we saw particularly cold, wet summers that have crop losses. Well, here in Russia, 3 weeks earlier than normal in Madigan, the first frost is happening in late July. This is extremely rare to see summer coming to an end so quickly. It was obviously a slow start to the summer as well. And Moscow's been totally wet. We're seeing, where else is it totally wet right now? Myanmar, 115,000 people displaced after widespread flooding there. Also huge floods in Norway. And in India, they had an amazing 110 inches of rain in just 4 days. Record rainfall there, which is causing crop losses and sending people more climate refugees, which is going to be a continuing theme in these next few years. Las Vegas Valley in Nevada, there's also extreme flooding. And I'm also going to drop a link to this study about how the agricultural system is just hanging on a pin. I think there is a 1 in 3 chance, it's cited in this study, that there is a major problem in production. Here we go. Every 1 in 3 years, there's some chance that severe stress impacts all of the regions in the United States, which would lead to, you know, extreme food shortages and food price rises. Now, this is without even taking into consideration the grand solar minimum. So it is true that our agricultural systems are stressed, as were those during, but just before the Great Famine of 1315. And now we're seeing these strange, extreme weather events, out of season weather, extreme events that are damaging crops. I liked this particular article, to which, I'll link below, that sort of summed up 7 of them that are extremely rare. In this case, a huge downpour right in Pennsylvania, where it's been the wettest July on record. Some crazy low-pressure zones swallowing up each other. You should check out this article. It's fun to read about. Rare cold front hitting the southern United States in late July. A cold, wet summer. So, folks, the point of this, besides, as always, bringing the events and tying the data points together, the point of this one is to really, really make it clear that we are entering the exact same conditions as they saw during the Great Famine of 1315. Our agricultural systems are at risk. They have been anyway. They're depleting the topsoil. It is time to take your food security into your own hands. And that is, as always, the point of the Ice Age Farmer. So you can stay tuned to my stream, twitter.com/IceAgeFarmer, where I keep a running log of these and more news stories, sort of the narrative of as things are going down here. But I cannot stress enough, please start growing food today. And with that, let's get into the question of the day. This question is with respect to Bitcoin, specifically cryptocurrencies in general, but especially Bitcoin right now because of the upcoming fork, which has been long discussed, and a lot of fear, uncertainty, and doubt has been circulating around this. I've talked a bit about cryptocurrencies in the past and have disclaimed that I do own some Bitcoin. I used to be a Bitcoin miner, and I still own some, but don't want to get too much into cryptocurrencies right now, except because of this fork coming up. I did want to acknowledge that there is probably, at least my opinion, it is safest at this point in time to be having your Bitcoin balance in your own wallet. So if it's stored in exchange, whether it's Coinbase or elsewhere, now might be a good time to go ahead and slurp down those, transfer those Bitcoin into your own wallet on your own device. And I don't mean some third-party mobile wallet. I literally mean getting the classic Bitcoin app. This is just, again, this is, you can do whatever you want, but this is what I've chosen to do, because if you don't actually own the private keys, the coins themselves, then you're not really in control of your Bitcoin. It's just some, you know, someone's web app that tells you you've got a balance on there until you withdraw them. and when things are potentially changing, although I don't think this is a hard fork as a lot of people have been talking about. I think at worst, it's just another altcoin. We'll see how it plays out. But it is just a personal preference of mine to hold Bitcoins, especially because at this point, like it's up to Coinbase. They've announced a policy, and it's that that there'll be whatever your balance is, it will be your Bitcoin balance going forward, and they will not support Bitcoin Cash. So I don't know. They could change that policy, or I just don't like not being in control of my assets. So if you're stacking or if you've got Bitcoin, take it in your own wallet. It's sort of the same. Take physical. That's the closest you can get to physical of a Bitcoin without opening that whole can of worms. At any rate, let's leave that there for today. I am happy to answer other crypto questions. IceAgeFarmer@gmail.com. And with that, this has been the 5th episode of Ice Age Farmer Podcast. Thanks for listening, and I hope you got something out of it. Please tell your friends about the Ice Age Farmer Podcast. That is how the community will grow, and we will get more brain trust in here and continue to map a path to prosperity through the uncertain times and the grand solar minimum. Let's go do awesome things.